Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams
and Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 418. And tonight, we do not have a Night Vale episode to recap because they are still on hiatus, and we also don't have a Lore Olympus. Eventually, I'll stop saying that.
Yeah, our mourning period is still going on for that, but we did get some interesting notifications about how she's got a couple new graphic novels coming out at some point, yeah. So that's nice.
Yeah. Did you see over on Blue Sky, she actually posted a picture of Unity Studio Weta, W-E-T-A, that does a lot of like special effects and statues. They've actually developed a statue for Lore Olympus. I'll put in a link to
it. Oh, I gotta see that. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. So in addition to that, since we haven't been listening to Night Vale or reading Lore Olympus, we have been catching up on the things. And one of the things that we actually started, because Hannah so highly recommended it, we both finally watched the first episode of Poker Face.
Yes, and I had avoided any press about this because I wanted to be surprised, other than the fact that everybody was just kind of delighted with it.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize what the central conceit was for the main character. So when you find that out, I was like, oh, that's going to be interesting to explore.
Yeah. So giant, great big spoiler warnings in case you were wanting to go into it completely unspoiled. But the main character can tell when people are lying. Now, she does clarify at one point because someone says something like, oh, what's it like always knowing the truth? And she's like, no, I don't know the truth. I only know when somebody's lying, and then I have to figure out why they would lie. So it's not as simple as knowing the truth. She just knows when what she's been told is wrong, and that's why it's so helpful for poker, because she knows when someone's bluffing.
Yes, but that managed to get her caught by a big mogul of a casino who spread the word around that she was cheating, which she kind of was, because not everybody else has that ability. But then he gave her a job. So she works as a cocktail waitress at a casino, and then the casino is given to the mogul's son. It was actually, he thinks his son is a fuck-up, and told him to run the casino and figured he couldn't do any damage. And then his son finds out what the main character can do, and then we move on from there, because now you get to figure out how can you make use of when someone can tell that someone's lying, but then you're also lying about stuff, or you're not telling the truth, and you have to avoid telling a lie, also try to avoid letting them know that you're evading the question. And it's just, it's wonderful to see this cat and mouse things, because you know some of the things that are going on that everyone will lose their shit over, but everybody's having to avoid the subject because she will know when they're lying.
Yes, and all the acting is so. Oh. Adrian Brody is playing the son, and Benjamin Bratt is playing his henchman, and Benjamin Bratt is looking very nice in these episodes, by the way.
He is
aging into his face really well.
And Natasha Lyonne, of course, is fantastic. I mean, I have so missed getting to see her because I haven't ever watched the second season of Russian Doll, because I figured it just couldn't live up to the first season. So now I'm like, I get to watch a first season of something that she's doing. Yay!
She plays such a great character in that, you know, here she does have this gift and everything, and she was using it to play poker. She's really concerned about the state of the world and really wants people to do things to make the world better. But for herself, she seems to be perfectly content just sort of rotting away as a cocktail waitress in this mobile home out in the middle of the desert, just drinking beer all day. It's just such an interesting way to play this, like, extremely driven yet extremely not ambitious at all character.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating.
Yeah, because the Adrian Brody's character was just asking her why she was like not mad about the fact that her promising poker career was basically cut short, and she was like, well, it was boring and I didn't really care all that much, and I've got a job and it's fine and I like my job. And I think he asked her at one point if she'd ever had money, and she said she was rich for a while when she was doing her little poker thing, and he wanted to know what that was like, and she said something like, it's better than being broke, but it's a lot more work than just fine.
Yeah. And I think all of us have met people like that. I remember just living in San Diego when I first moved in town, and me and the guy that I was dating, he had a friend or somebody he worked with who had this tiny little studio apartment, and he was working as a valet parker. And he was perfectly content to make just enough money to pay for this apartment and food and buy video games. And that's really all he wanted to do. And just imagine somebody, you know, he was a young kid, so I think a lot of people go through that, but imagine somebody as they get older who is still totally fine with doing that. It's like, hey, I got a place to live and I got beer. I'm fine.
Yeah. You know? So it gets really exciting in this episode mm-hmm. as you get closer and closer, both to her finding out what's happening and them, the other people finding out that she's found out what's happening and how exactly is she going to be able to deal with all of this. And it's like, oh God, they really threw a curveball at the very ending there. I mean, she threads the needle of what she can and can't prove to people. Right. And it's just, and the rest of the season is going to, Hannah said that it's kind of like this one mystery an episode sort of show. And I think that's great because she's going to be like traveling around the world solving crimes, but also I can't even get into why she's having to travel around the world solving crimes at this point without spoiling the ending of the episode. So, oh boy. Yeah. Fun. It is a fun show.
And clever. It's absolutely clever. I think Hannah also called it charming as well, because it is kind of charming.
It is kind of charming because she's tough, but she doesn't seem to be really mean-spirited, this character, when she has every right to be. I mean, her catchphrase is bullshit, because when somebody says something, it's a lie, she will just tell them that she knows they're lying, unless she has to hide that she knows that they're lying.
Right. Yeah. And then Joseph Gordon-Levitt is apparently going to show up in episode 9. And we realize today, the last time, now we're not counting the Knives Out movies because he's done voices in that. He's done voices for a lot of random things here and there that I may have seen. But the last thing I ever saw him in was 2012 in Looper. I can't believe he's one of my favorite actors. What the heck have I been doing?
Has he been in a bunch of stuff?
Yeah. He was in a couple, at least one Oscar nominated something or other, the something 7, whatever. I don't know. Yes. He's been in quite a few things that have done very well. A lot of them are like political type dramas that I don't really have any interest in watching.
Oh my God. Politics? No. I'm sorry. God. I'm eating, sleeping, and breathing politics right about now, and I'm tired of it.
Yeah, same. The world is way too interesting right now, which is why we're escaping into other things.
Yay!
So my thing to escape in, I was scrolling through Instagram, because that's kind of my comfort thing right now, because you can avoid a lot of the politics if you're just looking at nice, fun little reels on Instagram. There just randomly was a clip from the trailer for the Grand Budapest Hotel, which I have never seen. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how it's so hard for me to commit to watching a movie a lot of the times. So I'm like, ugh, I just don't want to spend the time, whatever. It just coalesced in my brain. And I'm like, yes, I want to watch it. And I want to watch it right now. So I rented it on Amazon and it is charming AF.
Exactly how I would describe The Royal Tenenbaums, which I also watched for the first time a while ago. And now, after seeing that and after seeing Asteroid City, which I really, really liked, I have to go back and rewatch Rushmore and The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, because those two movies were the first two Wes Anderson movies I had ever seen. And I didn't know they were supposed to be like that, because I spent most of those movies going, why is everybody acting like this? So now I know it's like they're doing that because it's a Wes Anderson movie.
Yes, exactly. It's funny because one of the things that really jumped out at me about Asteroid City, because that's the first Wes Anderson movie that I've seen, was that horizontal movement of the camera. Mm-hmm. Now, in Asteroid City, it felt mechanical because it was sort of playing off on the idea that this was like, it was happening in the real world, but it was also a play at the same time. Mm-hmm. So even when they were in the real world, you had this feeling of almost like set pieces moving back and forth on a stage. Mm-hmm. So there's not quite as much of a mechanical feeling in Grand Budapest Hotel, but he still loves his horizontal movements. You know, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, two small people walking from one side of the screen to the other, or the entire screen moving left and right. So there was a very familiar feeling in that. Also, it's just beautiful. It is just gorgeous, gorgeous filming.
The cinematography on Wes Anderson movies. I mean, yes, there is a real style to his movies. Yeah. And I've seen people do like, you know, plug into an AI, like do this particular book only in the style of a Wes Anderson movie. And you'd get that really kind of surreal, bright pops of color kind of thing that happened. But it's just, it's so hard to capture in my brain what it is that makes a Wes Anderson movie a Wes Anderson movie. But it's just, yeah. I mean, there'll be just fun moments and moments where you absolutely hate a particular character, and then you decide you kind of sympathize with them and you like them afterwards. You're wondering, how the hell did this happen?
Yeah, it's the story. I went into the story completely unspoiled. I just knew it had something to do with a hotel. Mm-hmm. And having watched it now, I'm glad I went in unspoiled. But I also, it's after seeing Ralph Fiennes in The Menu, mm-hmm. I really wanted to see Ralph Fiennes in another role. And it's a good role.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Because yeah. I want to see more of him, too.
Yeah. And this is a good one. And Hannah was, I mentioned that to Hannah that I wanted to see him something else. She said, yeah, but that's going to be really different from this. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's way different. It's still, like, The Menu has sort of a quirky feeling, but way, way darker. But yeah, and, you know, The Grand Budapest Hotel has some sad bits in it, too. So it's really... Yeah, I enjoyed it. I still think I like Asteroid City slightly better, but I can't really articulate why, especially not without spoilers.
Okay, so, yeah.
But yeah, I really liked it. It was very fun.
Well, I got to just like look through IMDb at all of his movies, because we play that Actorly game with Hannah.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can remember who was in the Wes Anderson movies, then you will have like a whole list of people to choose from when you're trying to guess who the freaking actor of the day is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, even in Grand Budapest Hotel, he's got these major characters, these major actors, I should say, but they're only in the movie for maybe like 5 minutes. So many cameos. My goodness.
Right. Like Asteroid City had Tilda Swinton, and I think she had like maybe like 2 minutes of screen time.
Probably. Yeah, probably. So crazy.
Well, what I'm catching up on is I watched the first two episodes of season 2 of Mayor of Kingstown. Uh-huh. And I see what you were talking about how the tone, it's not... God, the first season was so good, and you can really feel a little bit of drop off. Like, and I know that Iris has been traumatized, but I'm kind of annoyed with her right about now, because before she was kind of like this almost otherworldly sort of traumatized. And here she's just like, she's traumatized and she's mad at everybody. And that's basically her character note. I'm so disappointed in Diane West's character.
Oh,
yes. Who plays their mom. But it's interesting because, you know, just as a palate cleanser, I'm rewatching the first season. And I'd asked you if they had turned her character into the person who says not to do the fun thing.
Right.
The thing is, she was always that character. The mom
yes.
was always the person telling people not to do the thing. She's doing less of that now. It feels like she's going along with stuff. And I don't like it so much. The only thing that really stood out as being at all realistic to her character from the first season was when she goes back into the women's prison to teach her class. And instead of desks, they're all in this wide circle. And they've got armed guards in body armor standing guard over everybody. And she's trying to tell everybody that they still have choices, that, you know, even though they're in prison, this isn't the end of their choice. They can still choose to learn things. But she gets flustered and she says, I'm sorry, I can't breathe when there are stormtroopers here. You have to leave or class is over. And unfortunately, the guards call her bluff and they say, okay, everybody out. And they all walk
yep.
out. And that was,
yep.
so that was a little bit of, you know, her character again, but I don't know.
Yeah.
She's just kind of... Yeah. And what ticked me off is that season where she gets mugged and she gets like smashed in the face because she tries to fight this teenage kid for her purse and ends up on the ground. And the police come in and they're making sure that she's okay. And she sees them bring the kid in because they caught him just down the street and they obviously beat the tar out of him. And yeah. she tells them that she's not going to press charges and tells them to let him go. And I do not agree with that at all, because I know what she was saying. She was saying that arresting this kid is going to be signing him up to be brutalized by the police. And because he's probably got a record, he's probably going to go away. And at the same time, what's going to happen to the next person that he attacks? Like, maybe it's going to be somebody who's even more frail and like gets badly hurt when he hits them in the face and runs off with their purse. So I just like, oh, that kind of choice always really bugs me, because you're like, you're abdicating responsibility for anything else that this kid does after you just decide you're just going to let him go.
Yeah, it is interesting what you said about how she was always the person saying not to do the fun thing. I think the reason why that because usually that irritates me when the woman is reduced to that as a character in a TV show or a movie. They're just the woman who's saying not to do the fun thing. It's irritating. Mm-hmm. I feel like the two reasons why that didn't irritate me with her was, one, she was so strong. It never felt to me like she was being whiny or anything. I mean, she was irritating as heck, but only because she was so angry. And I think when you're coming from a position of so much strength, it's easier to listen to. Mm-hmm. Second of all, because she was right. I mean, they're talking about keeping the peace in town and everything, and you kind of got to look at what's going on. You're like, yeah, but you're making all these deals with skinheads and gang members and everything and sending drugs into the prison. And is it helping? I'm sure it is, because you got to figure that, of course, a lot of people who end up in prison are there because the system is weighted against them. And so they were screwed from the moment that they were born. And so maybe you're trying to help out with that a little bit. But she was just like, you're dealing with criminals day in and day out, and eventually you're going to get killed and your kids are not going to have a father. And she's right, you know?
Yeah.
She's absolutely right. So it's, you know, she wasn't irritating because, one, she's strong, and two, she's right. And both of those things kind of went out the window the second season.
And, you know, I hadn't even thought about it, but her scenes kind of parallel Mike's scenes when he's talking to the police officers and he's the one telling them not to do the thing. And it's just
That's another
episode of nobody listens to Mike. But yeah, the second season, I thought maybe they would just move on from the riot that happened at the end of the last season. But no, it's absolute chaos. And I never considered that before. The idea that if you had a riot that covered the entire prison, you can't just let everybody go back into the prison and not expect that maybe somebody's going to be hiding in a corner somewhere. You have to clean the entire thing out, which means all of the prisoners are out in the yard in tents with no plumbing and no air conditioning. And all of the strongest guys involved in the riot are dead now. So it's a free for all with everybody trying to get control. And somehow they're able to issue commands to their guys outside. And now there's drive-bys and entire parties getting gunned down because everybody's trying to be the next person who's in control. And it's like, it's effectively violent. I mean, that part of the season is working really, really well. The idea that it's like, oh, it's bad when the bad people are in charge. It's worse when nobody's in charge.
Yeah, and that kind of leads to the idea of that's why you need people like Mike to try and keep the peace, mm-hmm. just to try and keep people. Because, I don't know, it would never stop. I mean, talk about when you have a vacuum in power like that, people would continue to try and fill it, and it would go round and round, and people would die and then get thrown into prison, and the cycle continues. I guess Mike is just trying to find some way to stop that from happening. It's just kind of a futile sort of enterprise, though.
It's just bailing water on the Titanic, I think. It's not even rearranging deck chairs in the Titanic. There's nothing that civilized going on here.
No, absolutely not. But yeah, I haven't watched the latest episode of the third season yet. I did watch it last week's episode, which I don't think we talked about on the podcast, and I am still enjoying the third season more than the second season.
Okay.
But it's a different show than the first season, I feel. There's just something changed, and I haven't looked to see if maybe a showrunner left. I have no idea. But Jeremy Renner's doing really good. You have no idea that this guy almost died in a bad accident a year ago. He's doing very well.
Oh, my God. I mean, seeing an interview quote from him about the fact that he heard his skull cracking when that thing rolled over him, and he's out there and he's still acting. It's just amazing. Like, just even surviving would be one thing and being able to regain the ability to walk. But the fact that he's wading back into what's probably a pretty grueling schedule filming a TV show is, wow.
Yeah. And I haven't noticed anything. Like, I was waiting to see if there was something where you could see, maybe he's doing an awful lot of scenes where he's sitting down or something. No, he seems to be, if they're having to film around any type of pain issues or strength issues and everything, I haven't noticed it. So it's doing good on him.
Good.
And then in addition to catching up on stuff, there was all this extra time when I could have spent catching up on even more things and some movies we talked about and some TV we talked about. But what did I do? I did a very quick reread of the entire Wicked and the Divine series.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. I mean, that thing just melted my brain, and I took it at a very slow pace. So reading it all, how many issues was that series?
It's 9 graphic novels, I believe. So you got to figure at least 5 issues per graphic novel. And I did kind of skim it this time. I wasn't determined to read everything, completely and pore over it carefully and everything. If there got to a section where I was like, oh, I remember what this is, I would feel free to skim forward. But it's still, I like it I like it more every time I read it. The only thing that I would want at this point is the experience of reading it again for the first time.
Oh, my God. Man. Especially that bit with the, like pages and pages of nothing but black boxes.
Unbelievable. Just so startling. It just takes all really the wind was. Out of you when you read it. Oh, God. Oh, boy. But, yeah, highly recommend this. So if people haven't read that one yet, because he's written other stuff, but his stuff gets, I guess, esoteric might be the word, where he's very much into the science of telling stories. And I feel like his series Die, and then I think Phonogram, I think is another series. I don't know. It's just, sometimes I feel like he's digging into an area that is above my head and I just don't care enough. But I felt Wicked and the Divine, it was very intelligent, but it didn't go to like this. It just was talking about stories. That's all you really need to know. It's talking about stories and how they shape people. When you get into Die, you're talking about the beginning of collaborative storytelling and all the people that went into doing that and what it means and the history of RPGs. And I'm like, I don't think I care, but that's fine.
It's hard to make people care about that sort of thing. I had mentioned about playing Dungeons and Dragons to Mom when I was talking to her the other day, and she said she never did understand what the heck all that was about. And I just told her it's collaborative storytelling, basically. Yeah. It's just like it's and you follow a story and you roll the dice to see what random action will happen at certain points, and she still doesn't understand. So fine.
No, that's fine. That's completely fine. I understand that. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. If you are listening to this right now, Pixelated Geek is at San Diego Comic-Con.
Woo! And in a couple of days, this North Carolina branch of Binary System Podcast will be spending a few hours at GalaxyCon in Raleigh.
Very nice.
So we were able to get some an afternoon ticket to just go check out the cosplay, I think is what we're basically going to be doing. Because I wanted to get Colleen Duran to sign something maybe, but she had to cancel. And a friend of ours wanted to go see Neve Campbell. And she also canceled. So I don't know what's happening there. Maybe that's normal. I don't go to see the celebrities most of the time because I freak out about the idea of meeting somebody famous that I happen to admire and wondering if I'm going to like talk to them and have, you know, kale leaves stuck between my teeth or something and have to think about that forever.
It's such a very specific fear you have on that.
Yes,
you mentioned that before.
Yes. So well, I confused a dentist one time. She was like, "Were you eating lettuce before you came here?" Like, "No, it was kale and I brushed my teeth, I swear."
At least it wasn't Oreos. I mean, that's what you do if you want to be mean to your dentist.
That's true.
Oreos beforehand. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, keep an eye out for the photo galleries to come. All that and more at pixelatedgeek.com. So I still don't know. Next week, we still won't have Night Vale. Not quite yet.
Not quite yet. So I'm going to have to watch a few more episodes of Poker Face and Mayor of Kingstown and, you know, other things. We still need to watch a couple more or all of the sequels to John Wick, because apparently they're really good if you can trust IMDb reviews.
Seriously, we have a lot of things that we should be doing, and hopefully we will spend the next week actually doing them and not rereading or rewatching things that we have already read and watched a billion times over. However, this is us. You never know.
You never know.
One way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later. Thank you.
Sorry. Siren.
Oh, siren.
Yeah. I was listening to it start while you were talking. I was like, just not putting any interjections until the siren goes away.
Are you noticing any difference from when I'm talking like this or when I'm talking like this?
I'm not hearing it. I can't tell what the microphone might be doing. But
yeah, oh, okay. Well, hopefully this isn't going to be messing up the recording. You're not going to be getting any soft stuff. Fine. Certainly, it picks up the computer noise perfectly, even though it's not pointing at it.
It basically always picks up what you don't want it to pick up.
Of course. Always. So, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, wasn't there one other thing that we read or watched or did?
Was there?
I guess maybe there wasn't.
Well, I know we've got San Diego Comic-Con and GalaxyCon coming up next weekend, so there's probably
yes,
have to mention that.
I was probably going to do that after the All That and More Pixel Duck, or that section of it. I guess there's no other books or no? I haven't read any other comic books lately?
No, I haven't. Saga's still on hiatus, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's coming back. I think it's coming back maybe later on this month, but I don't know exactly when.
Yeah. So. I haven't read any more of the Sacrificers, unfortunately. I have finished reading that pre-Columbian South America fantasy trilogy, finally. It took me ages to read that, but I'll post a review of that sometime.
Okay. Ooh, I know what I can say. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week, so make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, right?
I think so.
Yes, sir.